Technorama, episode 635. No joke. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. And if this is your first time joining us, welcome to the show. If you are returning, welcome back. Easy as that. It's a binary thing. You've either been here before or you're not. We appreciate it either way.
Hey, you've either been here before or you haven't. It's one or zero, right?
That's right. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and just across that virtual table from me is, of course, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. Actually, you know what? I just remembered the one thing I wanted to do for our show notes for April 1st, and I was going to do all of our topics, flip the whole show notes from the top down, and I totally forgot
to
do that.
So we end with the listener feedback, and we start with the question of the week?
No, we start with... Yeah, question of the week. Yeah, Geek Library, you're right.
Or we start with a 101 and we end with welcome to Technorama.
Yeah, even that far.
I think
I had a note for myself to do that, but I don't know what happened to it. I remember thinking about it.
Oh, it's a note you wrote to yourself when we first started podcasting, thinking it would be funny, but then you took it out now and went, not so much.
You know what? That's most things that I do. That's the way it
I got
works
a great
out.
Idea. Let me write that down.
Yeah.
Then you wake up in the morning and go, whatever I was eating last night, cut the dose.
Ooh, that was stupid. Yeah.
Let's do a little bit of feedback. We've got our question of the week. So that means we've got our mail music, even though we don't have any mail.
Letters.
We didn't get any letters. Nope.
We get your letters every day.
People are lying.
No. Didn't get me.
They're lying.
Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mail today.
Good morning, Dhruv. Dhruv is in India. It is Tuesday morning.
He's holding down the YouTube port.
He is. He's making sure. What is the YouTube port?
Fort.
Oh, fort. I think you said port. Like... Like SSH is port 22 kind of thing. I'm like, what port does YouTube come in?
He's holding down 443.
That's an important one.
Yeah.
Don't get it wrong. All right. Our question of the week last week was, what is your favorite opening scene to a movie? And I'll start with the Technorama page and just pick linearly mm-hmm. something. John Miller Jr. says, Superman, the movie. The John Williams score is magical every time I hear it.
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh,
you
man.
Who will believe a man can fly?
You know, what music did John Williams make that you hate? I mean, for crying out loud, every bit of it's the gym.
Pee-wee's Playhouse. I don't think
that was awesome, too. I love Pee-wee's Playhouse.
You know who sang the lyrics? He didn't do that. Who did the vocals for that song?
Oh, you talking about the actual show, the TV show?
Yeah, the TV show.
I think I know, but...
That was Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
That's not who I was thinking of. Okay.
With Jerry.
All right. What else you got?
Well, let's see. Steve London says, I have to say, Saving Private Ryan. Oh, my God, yes. That was a big one.
I have to go back and watch that. I don't remember the intro scene.
He did the walk up to the cemetery and then storming the beach scene.
Oh, that, okay. Yes. I remember storming the beach scene.
Yeah. It says, I was working in a cinema at the time of release, and I was there around 5 a.m. to do a test run of the film before the pre-release. I cranked up the volume to the max. I was the only living soul in the theater. I grabbed some popcorn, as you do at 5 a.m. Yeah, for breakfast, you know. Needless to say, but I didn't touch the popcorn. I must have seen the movie over a dozen times. But Blade Runner is a strong candidate as well. I got to tell you, my dad, he is a Vietnam vet. And I went with him to see Saving Private Ryan. And he said that storming beach scene.
Yeah.
He said, that's pretty much warlike, you know, on film.
When I went out in 2017 for my brother's promotion to captain of the police department, mm-hmm. there was a gentleman there, elderly gentleman, And my brother said, you ever see Saving Private Ryan? I said, yeah. This is the guy who Tom Hanks played. That guy was there. Yeah.
No kidding. Okay.
Yep. That was pretty cool.
Did you meet him? Did you meet the guy?
I met the guy. Unfortunately, I can't remember his name though, but I know Paul would. So yeah, I met the real guy who was Saving Private Ryan. Not Private Ryan himself. It was the other guy.
Right. Okay.
Like, that was cool.
It is. I mean, that is pretty cool.
He didn't look anything like Tom Hanks.
Poor guy.
We got another response from Joel Harper. He says, in Debbie Does Dallas, it starts with...
Whoa.
Wait. What rating is this podcast again? Winky face.
Yeah. Let's see. On your page, I'm going to read a couple here. Tiffany Mangan said Star Trek 2009, which I agree. That I enjoyed the opening scene to that very much. And of course, I want to call out Jack Mangan for loving her comment. It's his wife's comment.
The only thing wrong with that is that the Nokia ringtone in that opening scene.
Oh, it was like vintage ringtone or something. Who's I actually put that on my phone for a while.
Please.
It wasn't a Nokia either. But no, I thought that was a great opening scene for that movie. I see Jack Mangan himself says Star Wars 1977. I would agree with that too.
Denise Inglis already has said that too. He said, the original Star Wars, the opening shot of the Imperial cruiser is epic.
Yep. Jack went on to say Raiders of the Lost Ark, of course, and Temple of Doom. I'm trying to remember the opening scene for Temple. And he said Memento also has a fantastic opening. That was a pretty good movie.
Did you mention Eric Miller?
No, go ahead. I was leaving something for you.
He said, GoldenEye, a long scene, but wow. Just wow.
Is that the airport scene?
I'm trying to remember. You know, most opening scenes from James Bond movies are really good. I don't know.
Yeah, I want to say that was the airport scene, wasn't it? Where he's chasing the plane all the way to the edge of the runway?
I'm trying to remember each one. It's tough.
Oh, because you're getting so old.
Yes, it is. And there's so many James Bond movies. I can't even keep my Daniel Craig straight.
There's only one.
No. Daniel Craig, James Bond movies?
No. Oh, I thought you said I'm trying to keep my Daniel Craig straight. I was like, there's only one of them.
No. Yeah, no, the movies, the James Bond movies he made.
Okay.
All right. I think that's it. Have we run out?
Yeah. Well, right. I had no responses, but your wife did like my post. So there you go. Whatever that's worth. Thanks, Donna.
I was looking over Saturday night. I did my karaoke thing, and I'm looking over the reactions because it said, you know, Sunday morning I wake up to so-and-so reacted to your post. And I looked, and there was a series of, you know, the emojis. There's some hearts and there's some thumbs up and there's an angry face. I went, who gave me an angry face?
Yeah.
Who gave me an angry face? So I click through the thing to find out what the list is. I did.
Oh, did you hit the wrong one?
Somehow I accidentally hit the wrong one. I meant to like somebody's comment, but I must have like bumped it on the iPad or something. Like, man, I'm my own toughest critic.
Yeah, I posted something. I was surprised how many responses it got. And there was a couple angry faces. I'm like, or no, there was one. And I remember going, what was there wrong about this?
And right.
I don't know what happened there. But anyway, okay. I just figured I've done it before. Somebody's writing about somebody passing away and I'm like angry face. No, I didn't mean to put that on there. No.
I'm mad that they're gone. I'm in one of those stages of bereavement.
Yeah.
The stages of bereavement align with the emojis on Facebook.
That's it.
The stages are thumbs up, heart, hugging a heart, laughing, wow, crying, and angry. Those are the seven stages of grief.
Yeah. I just happened to notice I did that. I went, whoa, let's fix that.
All right, let's get that out of there. We'll give you another question at the end of the show. Looking forward to it. I can't hardly wait. Okay, that means it's time to jump right into... You know, the listeners are probably programmed to know those two songs go together. On this day in history for March 31st, 2021, this is the 90th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 275 days remaining in 2021, and if you're paying attention, tomorrow is April Fool's. So, happy fools on you. It was on this date in 1889 that the Eiffel Tower was officially opened.
And it was on March 31st, 1918, daylight savings times went into effect in the United States for the first time. To Chuck's chagrin. What?
Daylight saving time. It is not plural.
Oh, save.
You owe me a dollar. Everybody who says that wrong owes me a dollar.
There's a lot of savings with the daylight.
There is no savings. We're not saving anything. Sorry, a bad word almost came out.
Okay.
I need the cuckoo clock sound. We ain't saving. Ooh. It was 91 years ago today that the Motion Picture Production Code was instituted, imposing strict guidelines on the treatment of sex, crime, religion, and violence in film in the U.S. for the next 38 years.
I thought you were talking about the local district attorney.
They had strict guidelines on the treatment of sex.
Yeah.
That just didn't sound right at all.
I know. That's what I was saying. Anyway, it was on this date in 1951 that Remington Rand delivered the first UNIVAC 1 computer to the United States Census Bureau.
1951, kids. There's your trivia answer. UNIVAC. Every time I hear UNIVAC, I think of the robot from the Jetsons, Uniblab.
Yeah. Remember the great, I had UNIVAC the Great? Or what, yeah. What was that?
55 years ago today, the Soviet Union launched Luna 10, which later became the first space probe to enter orbit around the moon.
Hmm. And that same date in 1970, Explorer 1 re-entered the Earth's atmosphere after 12 years in orbit. Burn up.
March 31st, 1998, Netscape released the Mozilla source code under an open source license.
I would argue that probably changed the landscape for browsers for quite a while.
Oh, yes. Happy birthday goes out of the state to French mathematician and philosopher René Descartes, born on this date in 1596. He's the one who came out with the tape deck, right? Because you put it in the carts? Never mind.
Yeah, that was it. Born March 31st, 1730, French mathematician and theorist, Étienne Bezout.
We'll go with that. Dutch-American astronomer and academic Adrian van Manen was born 137 years ago today, and I'm sure we're massacring more than one of these names, but that's half the fun of this segment.
That's right. An Australian English physicist and academic, Nobel Prize laureate William Lawrence Bragg, because he always brags on himself, born on the same date in 1890.
Hey, if I had a Nobel Prize, I would brag too.
Two G's there. That's double bragging.
Fort Bragg? Japanese physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Shinichiro Tomonaga was born 115 years ago today.
And also born on the same date in 1943. This is the worst imitation.
I'm going. This isn't even a good James T. Kirk.
American actor. Christopher Walken.
He was born 143 years ago. I can't do it either. Never mind.
Hey, we need more cowbell. We'll just call it good.
Also turning 76 today is American computer scientist and engineer, the founder of Pixar, and I believe he's the vice president or the CEO or co-CEO or something right now of Disney, Edwin Catmull.
An American soldier and politician, 45th Vice President of the United States, and Nobel Prize laureate. There's a lot of those in this list today. Al Gore.
Wah, wah.
And inventor of the internet. There you go.
Reported inventor of the internet.
Right. Born on this date in 1948.
Let's get through the listener birthdays. Hopefully this will go a little bit better. April 4th has three birthdays. Wow, there are three on the 4th and there are four on the 5th.
It looks like we've got a full... flush or
if we were playing cribbage, we'd be raking in the points right now. Brian K, Joel McLaughlin, Amy Bowen, and that's our three on the 4th and the four on the 5th. is Chad Davis. Wait, there's two on the same line. Chad Davis and John Isler. Does that mean there's five on the fifth?
Yeah.
Griffin Sylvester, Yorga's mom, Martine Teismans, Ringmaster Greg from Dancing with Elephants, and on the sixth, we have one, Trevor Letecki. Could you keep track of any of that? Three on the fourth, five on the fifth, one on the sixth, and a partridge in a pear tree. That's the way it was for this day in history, February 17th. Who copied these show notes?
You did. I didn't update
No,
that.
I didn't put that in there.
I got to change that date too.
Okay. March 31st.
Where's your history robot? He's supposed to be
history bot. Rosie, woohoo! Bing,
bing, bing.
There's a Uniblab going off again. Okay, if you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, you go over to chuckchat.com. Let me get that up on the screen. Nope, that isn't it. Ding, we win.
That's
Patreon, contact us. Nope, not contact us. Birthday calendar, there it is. chuckchat.com/wiki. That's it. We're done. I can't do anymore.
All right. See
you. What's up next? Random blue button here.
Good news, everyone.
Well, kind of good news. We have some news about space junk removal. Oh, this is my kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Before then.
From CNN Business, it's invisible in the night sky. But just above us, there is a cloud of more than 9,000 tons of space junk. Equivalent to the weight of 720 school buses. The debris is composed of parts of old satellites, as well as the entire defunct satellites and rocket bodies. The debris poses risks to the International Space Station and threatens things we take for granted on Earth. Weather forecasting, GPS, and telecommunications. It's a problem that's getting worse, with more and more satellites being launched each year by ventures like Elon Musk's SpaceX. Oh, way to pin him under there. A demonstration mission to test new technology developed by the company Astroscale to clean up space debris is set to launch in the early hours of Saturday from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. A Soyuz 2 rocket will launch a 175 kilogram. We just went from tons to kilograms. Make up your mind on which way we're going with this. 175 kilogram spacecraft with a satellite attached into space. The spacecraft and the 17 kilogram satellite, the debris to be cleaned up, will separate and then perform a high stakes game of cat and mouse over the next few months. Astroscale will test the spacecraft's ability to snatch a satellite and bring it down toward the Earth's atmosphere, where it will burn up. It will do this in a series of different maneuvers, with the mission expected to end in September or October of this year. We're not real sure. We'll keep you posted. As part of the mission, the company will test whether the spacecraft can catch and dock with the satellite as it tumbles through space at up to 17,500 miles per hour. And there we are back to the empirical system again.
They are just changing around, isn't it? Well, CNN needs to.
So we're going to clean this up. I believe, a quick note, Astronomy Cast had an article not too long ago about space junk and cleaning it up and whatnot and how many pieces there are out there. And congratulations to them. I just saw before we started the show, they had episode 600 was released. So,
oh, they're finally catching up there.
That's because we're slacking off.
We're slacking off. Yeah, that's awesome. That's fantastic. You know, this was an interesting story because they were talking about using magnets to attach the satellite to the debris and then pull it down.
It's really hard to catch debris in space because even though you may be moving at 17,500 miles an hour, what is that other debris moving at? Even if it's going, slightly faster or slower, maybe it's only going 17,000 miles per hour. You're still passing it up at 500 miles an hour. It's going to be a problem.
Well, you're also talking about intercepting it, you know, at that speed. Now, when you see a capsule or something go to the ISS, or even when the shuttle was in place, you know, they look like they're moving, but they're moving. It looks almost like they're stationary, but you know they're not. But those big things, they're able to work it out. But I imagine trying to capture something smaller,
like a nut
or some pieces. I don't know how big the pieces are. They're actually trying to,
those are the kind that will, you know, you watched, what was the Sandra Bullock movie?
Gravity.
Gravity. Yeah. You watched Gravity. That stuff comes tearing through. I mean, you get pelted with nuts and bolts and it'll punch holes in your satellite.
Nothing. Oh man. I'll tell you what, that movie, whether it was 100% accurate or not, I don't know. I don't think it is, but that was kind of scary. You know, it just tore through the space station they were on. It crazy.
It can happen. Mm-hmm. Speaking of space, this seems to be a lot of space news we do on this show.
And debris, speaking of which, people in the Pacific Northwest were stunned Thursday night as they witnessed some mysterious objects in the sky around 9 p.m. While some theorized that it was a meteor, experts say it was debris from a rocket that did not have a successful deorbit burn.
Yeah. It was UFOs.
Yeah, that's right. Da-da-dum. So, KATU News, KATU News, sat down with Dr. Jonathan McDowell, an astronomer at the Center of Astrophysics at Harvard and Smithsonian. We've been expecting this rocket stage to re-enter sometime in the next few hours. So it was a pretty quick calculation for me, like a minute or sort of. He guessed about a minute before it happened. Come on. Anyway, so it was a pretty quick calculation for me, like a minute or so, to bring up the orbit data and confirm that, yes, at pretty much exactly 9 p.m., a minute. I call shenanigans on what he's saying here, but it would break up over the Pacific Northwest.
He was playing, you know, it's kind of like the basketball brackets right now. He was hedging his bet. He had this pool.
He's making changes at the very end.
He had a pool going. Okay, what day and time do you think it'll break up? I win.
Who's got 35 degrees latitude?
but you said 7 p.m. and it was 9 p.m. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, just a bit outside. So the astronomer says that they have been aware of it and expecting the rocket stage to re-enter, but they didn't have the specifics on the time or location. See, here comes the pool you were talking about. So the main thing people were surprised about is we knew it was happening, but we couldn't predict it to be Seattle, right? That's just because the thing is going so darn fast, right? 17,000 miles per hour. And that if you get the time slightly wrong, you know it's on the other side of the world, which is true. Also, that's why it's so hard to give advance warning on these things, Dr. Murdell said. I'm sorry. He was talking about his basketball brackets.
So hard to get these things right.
Yeah, but it was a cool, it was a pretty interesting visual to see. Look, you know what it reminded me of is at the beginning of Batman versus Superman. Superman and Zod are fighting and they're coming back in the atmosphere. It looked just like that. You know, when the satellite.
I'm sure they modeled that graphic after reality because that's what the Columbia looked like when it burned up over Texas. So
I'm just saying that's what it looked like. It looked like the Wayne satellite coming back in. Anyway,
we have the information. We have the technology. Let's do another one. Asteroid Apophis won't impact Earth for at least a century. Oh, thank goodness. NASA finds. No, we don't need this video to play audio.
You're hearing some more atmospheric music there?
No, it sounded kind of like Middle Eastern or African drums, which was kind of what I was thinking because Apophis was the bad guy on SG-1. But anyway, that was a way off tangent. We have an asteroid named for the Egyptian god of chaos and darkness won't be wreaking any havoc on Earth. At least not this century. That's the good news, everyone, from NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies, released on Friday. Asteroid 99942, Apophis. Wait, the number isn't 999 anymore. It's 0800-9998. Never mind. Okay, let's keep going. Well, Apophis has been considered one of the most hazardous asteroids with the potential to impact Earth since its discovery in 2004. Now, Scientists have revised that opinion after a precise analysis of the asteroid's orbit. Previous predictions noted that the 1,110-foot wide asteroid might be too close for comfort in 2029, 2036, and it could have a slight chance of impacting Earth in 2068. It recently passed within 10 million miles of Earth on March 5th. Bet you didn't see that coming. During the distant flyby, astronomers used radar observations to get a better handle on the asteroid's orbit around the sun. Their results allowed them to rule out any risk of the asteroid impacting Earth in 2068. The previous concerns about 2029 and 2036 had already been put aside due to prediction refinements and research. Quote, a 2068 impact is not in the realm of possibility anymore, and our calculations don't show any impact of risk for at least the next 100 years, said David Farnaccia.
Yes, all of those.
Navigation engineer and researcher at NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies, or CNEOS. With the support of a recent optical observations and additional radar observations, the uncertainty in Apophis's orbit has collapsed from hundreds of kilometers to just a handful of kilometers when projected to 2029, Farnaccia said. This greatly improved knowledge of its position in 2029 provides more certainty of its future motion, so we can now remove Apophis from the risk list. Gone, pizza boy! Okay, we're safe for another 100 years, at least, and by that time, I plan to be dead.
You plan on it? Okay.
Yeah. If it atomizes me, I'll already be pretty much worm food anyway.
Okay.
We have one more space story in the news. We're just going to have to rename our podcast at this point.
I'm actually changing the link because I found it somewhere else the other page kept coming up with a stupid subscribe to read the whole article.
I hate those.
Yeah. But I happened to find it on Ars Technica. And 2 years after the Event Horizon telescope made headlines with its announcement of the first direct image of a black hole, Science Magazine named the image its breakthrough of the year. Now, EHT collaboration is back with another groundbreaking result. A new image of the same black hole, this time showing how it looks in polarized light. The ability to measure that polarization for the first time, a signature of magnetic fields at the black hole's edge, is expected to yield fresh insight on how the black holes gobble up matter and emit powerful jets from their cores, as all most humans do, I would say.
No.
Okay. The findings. Well, mirrors life. So the new findings were described in three papers published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters. So I'm not going to read all that, but let's see. The work is a major milestone. The polarization of light carries information that allows us to better understand the physics behind the image we saw in April 2019, which was impressive in itself. I think they used some imaging to clear up to clear it up enough where you could see the black hole, which was not possible before, said co-author Ivan Mardivadal, the coordinator of the EHT Polarimetry Working Group and a researcher at the University of Valencia, Spain. Unveiling this new polarized light image required years of work due to the complex techniques involved in obtaining and analyzing the data. I won't read the paper, I'm scroll down here. So the multiple imaging methods resulted in the first direct image ever taken of a black hole at the center of the elliptical galaxy, located in the constellation of Virgo, some 55 million light years away. The galaxy is called Messier 87, or M87, if you don't want to say Messier. The collaboration's findings were published in April 10th of 2019 in 6 different papers featured in the Astrophysical Journal's Letters. It is a feat that would be impossible a mere generation ago, made possible by technological breakthroughs, innovative new algorithms, and of course, connecting several of the world's best radio observatories. So the image confirmed that the object at the center of M87 is indeed a black hole.
Those are cool pictures.
There are some really cool pictures. And one of them, I think they showed the one I was speaking of about in April. And then the next one, you can see it's more clearly, you can see streaks of light swirling in. It's fantastic.
Very cool. Thank you for going and getting those pictures and the article. We look forward to more information on black holes. Just think, 100 years ago, they were just theories.
Yeah.
And now we've got pictures of evidence.
I sort of say now they're real, but I guess they've always been real.
They've always been real. They've been out there. All right, let's give a quick shout out to the chat room. We've got a few people joining us tonight. We've got Mike Robeson and John Miller Jr. And, of course, Drew hanging out on Facebook. We're doing this on a Monday night because last night some things came up and we were not able to bring you the show. But we wanted to make sure that all this wonderful content did not go to waste. So let's thank you for that. Normally, we would be doing this Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time. So I hope you can join us on Facebook or YouTube for that. And we will talk to you again soon. Otherwise, we have the regular podcast, which I know a lot of people are listening to us just on the audio podcast, too. But you can always catch us live or watch us later in video form, too. Like so many podcasts are doing these days. We were trendsetters way, way back then.
We did this back in 2005.
Ustream.
Ustream. We actually we used Ustream. There was another one I think we tried.
I don't think we used Twitch when it was just in TV. We did Google Hangouts for a long time, but that ended up on YouTube anyway.
Hangouts. Maybe that was what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, a lot of that was so we could at least see each other as we talk.
Yep.
Because I know you like to look at me when we're talking.
You're over there in my field of vision. I'm just making sure there's a video running.
I'm in the corner of your
reading
eye.
The notes. Let's move on to the history segment. Woo! I mean, the Remember When segment. We already did history. Yeah. Remember when that Canadian town once derailed a diesel train and drove it down the street to provide emergency power?
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't. Okay. But let's read on. I'm sure there's more in this story that I haven't read yet. So even in a suburb of Montreal that's well-versed in dealing with winter storms, inclement weather can still overwhelm basic services like power, an issue with which millions of people in Texas are still currently struggling. When was this article released? February 19th. Okay.
Yeah. So it's not that far along.
Late breaking news. Six weeks later. So we'll just imagine they're still struggling.
It was a slow news week. I had to find something. Okay.
Especially bad ice storm in 1998. The mayor of Boucherville, Quebec, had a clever idea to borrow a diesel-electric locomotive and use it as a supersized emergency generator. Park that outside your house and see if the neighbors care.
Right.
In most Canadian cities, grabbing a snow brush and cleaning off your car before you head out to work in the morning is all part of enduring winter months. In cities like Montreal, however, it's not uncommon to have to first find your car in the morning after an overnight snowstorm leaves it completely buried. But I can picture, like, in the avalanche, they're just going with the sticks, sticking them down the snow till you hit a car. Dunk! I hit one.
Is that how you found your car back in Wisconsin?
My car never got that buried. There was always like a bump in the snowbank. You knew where it was.
Okay.
Although there was one time when I left my car in a parking lot and the front end loader, the payloader, came and pushed up these big snowbanks, and I thought it was just going to take my car out because I had like little Dodge Omni at the time, which was pretty much
it could have been easy to tin can, you know, car, if you didn't see the car.
I've had to dig the car out a few times with just, there was no sign of it, I got a shovel 4 feet of snow off of the car, and it's in a parking lot next to other cars.
Right.
And I've got to somehow get 3 or 4 feet of snow behind the car cleared out. So it's like, that's a lot of material to move by hand with a shovel.
Do you miss the snow?
No. Not at all. I will go visit the snow. I will go ski on the snow, but somebody else can deal with it. Okay. For the most part, snowstorms are mostly an inconvenience in the northern Canadian cities, leaving side streets impassable until plows finish with major routes. Ice storms, when temperatures result in freezing rain falling from the earth instead of picturesque snowflakes, are a different story. The ice sticks to whatever it lands on and accumulates, often adding thousands of extra pounds of weight to trees or power lines and towers, which eventually pushes them against their structural capacities until they... That's exactly what happened across parts of northeastern Canada over the week of January of 1998. 3 successive ice storms brought down power lines and towers supporting them that take much longer to fix, leaving over 1.5 million people without power in the middle of winter. A lack of power doesn't just make it difficult for people to stay warm and feed themselves. It also makes it difficult for elected authorities and emergency personnel to plan and coordinate repairs and efforts to assist people they represent. So while staring down endless questions about when power would potentially be restored, the mayor of Boucherville, Quebec, Francine Gadbois, I'm going to go with that, came up with a clever plan to at least get the town, city hall, and emergency warming shelters up and running in the immediate future. Modern locomotives run on diesel fuel instead of coal or wood, as their steam-powered ancestors did. But the fuel is actually used to power onboard generators that create electricity to power the electric motors that drive the train wheels. Did you know that?
I did.
Yeah, me too. It's like diesel locomotives, the diesel is just used to power the generators, and they're really just giant electric trains.
Yeah, steam was more direct, but this is a little indirect.
Yeah. So where were we? Oh, in other words, modern locomotives are really just giant mobile generators, and Gadbois had recalled stories about them being used to provide power to small towns in rural northern Quebec several years prior. After some calls to the Canadian National Railway, the diesel locomotive M420W3502 rolled into Boucherville to provide some much-needed assistance. The rail line was close to the town city hall, but not close enough for this unusual application, so a crane was used to lift the diesel engine off its tracks and place it on the boulevard.
Yeah, you can see the picture. The wheels are sitting on top of the ground. It's not.
From there, the locomotive completed the last 1,000 feet of its journey, rolling down the street under its own power while caused the train's flange wheels to cut deep tracks into the asphalt, which later had to be repaired. Cables were run from the diesel's engine to the nearby municipal buildings, and its throttle was set to a speed which would produce roughly 375 kilowatts of power at 60 hertz, well below the locomotive's maximum power of around 2,000 horsepower, which is the alternating frequency of North American power systems runs on. I was just wondering, how did they have to set up some kind of inverter? It sounds like it's coming out of this thing as AC?
Yeah.
That's interesting. At 60 hertz. Lucky things were compatible, because how many Star Treks have we watched where, you know, the power conduits are not compatible and they had to run it through the EPS conduits and...
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry. That was just a whole bunch of technobabble nonsense that they made up anyway.
Well, it is interesting that they would come, that somebody would realize that they could use it for that application. So that's pretty cool.
That's a creative way to do it. And then when the snow was cleared up, I'm sure they had to put it back on the tracks and say, on your way, little train. Thank you very much. Yeah. Who's paying for these roads?
Yeah, the little train that could. Yeah. That's, the mayor comes out and says, hey, did y'all see this?
Who approved that?
Yeah, who approved that? You did, sir. Nah, there's no way.
All right. Interesting story about the trains. A very ingenious way of taking care of that problem. And yeah. I think that leads us up to the Patreons, right? Yes.
Yep.
Thank you, dear patrons. Last week, we did not have a patron show. We had, let's just say we had issues.
Yeah.
So we did not release that show with Brian Brown. So apologies for that. You will not be charged for that one. But we will get you more content this week that you can listen to.
But if you want us to, we can charge you for it. Just
No, that's not the way Patreon works.
Oh, okay.
If all we right, don't fine. Produce, they don't pay. So thank you for your generous contributions to keep this show running. People like Alexis Duran and Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, who was here on the last show, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, who we mentioned earlier, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, don't want to call him Harry, don't know if that's the way his friends call him or not, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorgis Rowan, Christina, thank you very much, Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and of course, Sweet Steve London. Thank you, everybody, for your support. That money goes directly to paying for domain registration and hosting and equipment.
Your new headphones goes straight to hungry podcasters everywhere.
The old headphones were literally rotting on our heads. We take off the headphones and these be black circles. And I looked for new ear cups and they were almost as expensive as the headphones.
Yeah, a few more bucks and you got new headphones.
So, yeah, so yeah. It really wasn't worth it. And they weren't expensive headphones. The old ones were not that expensive anyway. So thanks. We got a couple new sets of headphones. We'll probably get a couple more when we get people back in the studio at some point, which is coming soon. Arizona opened up their registration from 16 on up this past week. And Donna actually got her first shot.
Wednesday for here.
I forgot to put that title up. Hold on. We got to get the title on to here. And if you want to be a wonderful person and donate as little as $1 a show.
That's it.
That's it. You can go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. And we would be greatly appreciated. You'd fill Chuck in that last blank on the squares that's been driving.
Chuck and I think that $1 a show is a bargain.
It is. In fact, we donate $1 a show to several other shows to keep them in business.
I'm wearing a shirt from one.
You are. I was wearing that shirt yesterday. Weird. Not that exact shirt, but my copy of that shirt.
Your copy of that shirt?
Evil Genius Chronicles. All right. Did we really use up practically all that song going over that? We love our patrons, and we just don't know when to stop talking sometimes. So let's fade that out, cut the music, bring it back, and I think we have a pass the remote.
Just a quick one. It's actually a start.
I think I finished watching something now, too, and I can't remember what it was.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll go ahead and talk about it a little bit.
You do that one. I'll save mine for next week.
Okay.
Well, let me play the music. There we go. And don't throw the remote at me this time.
Ow. There you go. So I started watching with Kim The Irregulars, which is on Netflix, and it is a like a Sherlock sideshow, not spinoff, but it's Sherlock's involved, but you don't actually see Sherlock. That was the funny thing. They never show his face. More like you see Watson dealing with these people, but it has a supernatural spin on it. So we watched three episodes the other night, and I thought it was kind of interesting.
It showed up at the top of my Netflix list when I went to go look.
Yeah, there you go. So the people around London are getting these powers, and Watson and Sherlock wanted to hire some people, some street people, which Sherlock did do that in a lot of his stories. He dealt with a lot of street people because they knew things that were going on, you know, that you normally wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So he hired them because they were good at tracking down these supernatural kind of stories. So anyway, he hires them, and that's the characters that we start dealing with. And you deal with Watson, but we only see Sherlock's feet. He's doing his, he was famous for doing his cocaine. And so
yep.
he's going through like one of those spells, so you don't really see him. But I thought it was interesting. We're three episodes in. I forget how many episodes is. Are you looking at it or?
No, I'm still trying to find what I just watched, and now I don't remember. I'm going to write these down when I actually watch them.
But it's worth it. I think it's worth it. The it had like a 74% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I thought was decent. So,
okay.
Yeah, give it a shot. I'll come back and give a more full review once I finish it.
And I will try to remember what I just finished because it was something that,
well,
it was only like three or four episodes. I think that says something
about what you just finished, doesn't it?
I go through so many shows, I can't keep them straight, so I got to write them down. Hmm. All right, let's move on to...
apparently you didn't write it down.
Can AI be hypnotized in the... Okay, let's go there. Geek Library time. That song gets better every time I hear it.
Does it?
Well, it's no longer considered science fiction fodder to imagine a human-level machine intelligence in our lifetimes. Year after year, we see the status quo of AI research shattered as yesterday's algorithms bear way to today's systems. One day, perhaps within a matter of decades, we might build machines with artificial neural networks that imitate our brains in every meaningful way. And when that happens, it'll be too late. Run for the hills, kids. It'll be important to make sure that they're not as easy to hack as we are. And there's a question mark that says, robo-hypnotism? The Holy Grail, which also came up on my Netflix list as a watch again. The Holy Grail of AI is human-level intelligence. Modern AI might seem pretty smart given all the hyperbolic headlines you see, but the truth is that there isn't a robot on the planet that can walk into my kitchen today and make me a cup of coffee without any outside help. That's because AI doesn't think. It doesn't have a, quote, theater of the mind in which novel thoughts engage with memories and motivators. It just turns input into output when it's told to. But some AI researchers believe there are methods beyond deep learning by which we can achieve a more natural form of artificial intelligence. One of the most commonly pursued paths towards artificial general intelligence, or AGI, which is basically another way of saying human-level AI, is the development of artificial neural networks that mimic our brains. They don't want to mimic my brain. It's random scattered thoughts. You're going to have like chips falling out of this robot. And if you ask me, that begs one question. Could a human-level machine intelligence be hacked by a hypnotist? While everyone else is worried about the Terminator breaking down the door, it feels like the fear of human vulnerabilities in the machines we trust is being overlooked. The field of hypnotism is an oft-debated one, but there's probably something to it. Entire forests worth of peer-reviewed research papers have been published on hypnotism and its impact on psychotherapy and other fields. Consider me a skeptic who believes mindfulness and hypnotism are closer than cousins. However, according to recent research, a human can be placed into an altered state of consciousness through the invocation of a single word. Sock puppets.
No, what? Sock puppets? What?
This, of course, doesn't work with just anyone. In the study I read, they found a hypnotic virtuoso to test their hypothesis on. If the scientific community is willing to consider the applicability of a single individual study on hypnotism to the public at large, we should probably worry about how it will affect our robots, too. It's all fun and games when you're imagining a hypnotized Alexa slurring its words and recalling its childhood as Jeff Bezos' alarm clock. But
right.
When you imagine a terrorist hacking millions of driverless vehicles at the same time using hypnotic traffic light patterns, it's a bit spookier. We already have those hypnotic traffic lights. I go to the corner of Greenway and 20th Street, and you know how they're made up of LEDs now? So if one burns out, there's like seven or eight of them out and a couple are blinking this weird pattern. I'm going, they're talking to your car right now. Right. There's a camera on the front of your car and it's taking on information.
Hey, at midnight, we're gonna break out, right? Right. Yeah, right.
Right. On the count of three, step on it.
Actually, when I first saw this article, it said, can AI be hypnotized? I thought, remember in Star Trek Discovery, they were Michelle Yeoh was blinking her eyes and it made the
yes, because you can crash. Out-binary a, yeah, no. That was just hopelessly cheesy. I'm sorry.
I think it was more funny than anything. I was like, what happened?
She would have been better off waving a magnet on the tabletop.
Magnet. Oh, boy. All right.
And all of a sudden the AI starts going, Jimmy crack corn and I don't care. Like Bender does. Right. I think that brings us to the end. We have a question of the week. We don't have a question of the week song. We need a stinger for the question of the week.
We do.
How about this one?
Find one now?
Okay. That was so terrible. I think you gave me cancer.
Yeah, no, that's not it. This one?
I'll pass on that one too.
How about?
The Hanna-Barbera. I love it.
We could go to our Star Trek ones.
Okay, that's good. Let's do that one.
So good, you have to do it two or three times. Okay, question of the week. We'll find something that works for that. Even if you are an adult, what's this if business?
I know.
Even if you are an adult, what is something that you are never truly too old for?
Cosplay.
I'm going to say getting a birthday card in the mail because I just got one today. Never too old for that. You know, think how exciting it was when you were a kid.
And it is nice still, to get something like that in the mail.
Still nice to get a handwritten birthday card, ideally from someone you know.
Wait, you didn't get mine? I sent it like a month ago.
Sure. or not just a birthday card, but any personal piece of mail like that, because we all get enough junk mail. But when you get that gem of a postcard from a friend or Technorama or a letter from someone you haven't heard from in a while. Yeah, I know we've got email and we've got phone calls, but there's something about that postal mail. That was the one that I thought of.
I got some actually around Christmas, especially Christmas time. It's nice to get cards and. I got a couple of nice ones. One from Mark Kilfoyle, Amy Bowen. She always sends a letter, talking about her past year, which is always kind of cool.
I've got a cousin that does that too, and usually includes pictures. Like, here's where only this year it was like three sentences and no pictures. I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
it was 2020. We didn't go anywhere and we didn't do anything. Here's your letter. Merry Christmas.
Hey, not according to Amy Bowen, she got around. She lives in Nebraska, and she went she had that passport where you go to the different important places and they stamp it. So I think she got them all, did she?
And normally in a normal year, you get the monthly Google Maps that says, you went to London, and then you went to Florida, and then you went to Chicago. Right. My February one said, you went to the kitchen, then the living room. Yeah. This isn't exciting anymore.
Get some fresh air in the backyard and went back in.
Ooh, you made it all the way to the end of the driveway. Way to go.
Hey, I was telling somebody the other day, I know it's probably some kind of security thing. I don't know, but I share my location on Google Maps. And remember, in 2019, actually 2018 and 2019, we went to Vegas. Mm-hmm. Is it Vegas?
Yes.
Is that right?
18 and 19 were in Vegas.
Right. So what was funny was I went out there to your house. Then we drove to Vegas.
Right.
And drove and came back. Well, what was funny was 2019, I remember thinking, hey, I think we did almost the same exact thing. We went to the grocery store. I got a coffee. We ate at the same breakfast place. And you know what? I pulled it up from the previous year.
That's exactly
what we did.
Same thing.
That was funny. Was like, I swear we were here last year. Craig looks on Google Maps and goes, we were here last year.
Yeah. I think we actually parked almost in the same spots.
Surprised they didn't have your coffee ready for you this time. Here you go, Mr. Stepp. The usual.
Yeah. Google said you were coming.
They were waiting for you in 2020. He's not coming.
Oh, that was kind of funny.
All right. Takes us to the end of the show. Thank you very much for joining us. If you've been hanging out with us on YouTube or Facebook, it's been a lot of fun. We hope to see you again here real soon. Until then, oh man, I got to get back to my Technorama sounds. I left it on the Star Trek panel. Come on, here we go. Nope, that ain't it. Stop. One button too high. And we'll try this. Well-oiled machine, as always. Wouldn't be Technorama if there weren't any foobars in it. So thank you very much, Craig, for finding all the news stories and putting those together.
Thank you, sir.
Team effort. I do the On the Day in History, the birthdays. He does the news stories. Together,
you got a bot for that.
All comes together. A bot for what?
Oh, wait. We got to feed the bot. So that's what the Patreon's for.
No, somebody hypnotized our bot. It's not too early for that.
Right.
Call us on the listener line. We'd love to hear from you. We've been having that Patreon thing up there for the last 20 minutes.
I challenge you to call us because we're not sure if it works.
There you go. 707-530-2428. 707-530-CHAT. Or email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Give me a binary high five, Craig.
All right. 101. Thank you, everybody.
Stay safe.